This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening around the world on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I am Alan Gervy, and yes, I am still the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, and today, as usual, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. Carrie Kasem is not here with me today. I'm kind of feeling like the Minnesota Vikings going into the season without a backup quarterback today. I'm going to be quarterbacking all on my own. And of course, as you know, I'm a huge Vikings fan, and we can only hope as the NFL season gets going this weekend that Sam Bradford will be the quarterback to take them to the Super Bowl. At least that's what I hope. I'm not here with Carrie, so I'm going to have to take you to the Super Bowl today. I want to tell you, folks, I spent a lot of time on Facebook this week, as I always do, and of course, I posted my cute little pictures of my two-year-old Harper and my three-year-old Hudson, who started preschool. It was great to get all those Facebook likes, and I'm so proud of my two little kids. But amongst all of those cute pictures, I kept reading Facebook posts from friends that were very political, most of them showing that people just aren't too happy about what's going on in this election. There are so many shared articles and comments about both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, and about the dissatisfaction that folks are feeling looking into this election. And I'll tell you something, it's really easy to write a Facebook post. 3 minutes, 4 minutes, you write about how Donald Trump is this or that, or Hillary Clinton is this or that, and there are a lot of choice words that people use. But you know, someone went out there and wrote a book about it. It wasn't just a three-minute Facebook post or a three-sentence Facebook share. It's actually a fascinating read. And today, we are honored and privileged on Gervy's Law to welcome back one of the most well-known and prolific legal scholars of our time, former Felix Frankfurter Professor of Law at Harvard, Professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz. Welcome back to Gervy's Law.
Thanks. I always enjoy being on your show. You have such good listeners, and your questions reflect the fact that you're a great lawyer.
Well, I appreciate that, Alan, and we have a lot to cover today, because I do, later on in the show, want to play you a clip from Christopher Darden, who was on the show a few weeks ago, and he had some choice words about you. Uh-huh. So that's something that you can look forward to.
But I'm looking forward to it with bated breath.
With bated breath.
Because I have some choice words about him.
Yes, and first I want you to hear what he said about you. I think it involved some physical violence, but we're going to get to that. So first, we've got more important issues. And the more important issues is this fascinating book that you have just written that has come out. And like I said, people can write their five-second blurb on Facebook, but you actually wrote a book with the most clever name that I think anyone could ever come up with, given the situation we're dealing with in this upcoming election. The book is called Electile Dysfunction, A Guide for Unaroused Voters. Now, you, like me, probably deal with a lot of people who are not satisfied. Why did you write this book?
Well, because all of my friends have come to me and said, what kind of a choice do we have? We don't like either candidate. We're going to stay home, or we're going to vote for a third party. What's come of America? Look, I like one of the candidates. I've known Hillary Clinton for a long time, and I'm going to support her. But I understand people who think that she is a candidate with deep problems and who believe that Donald Trump's a candidate with deep problems and who think we can do better. And we are in a situation of a real electoral dysfunction. And I wanted to write about that. I did a very quick book. I started it July 4th. I finished it by the beginning of August or middle of August, and it's an ebook. So, you know, you can get an ebook out very, very quickly, and you can get it on Kindle in 30 seconds. And it's, you know, it's a cheap book because it's a thin, easy read, but it's all about why we're in the situation we're in. I then provide a checklist for people. If you don't like either candidate, I have a checklist of issues that you should think about and decide whether you should vote either for a candidate or against the candidate. This is an election in which most voters are actually going to be voting against a candidate rather than for a candidate. The people who pulled the lever for Hillary, many of them are going to be pulling the lever against Trump and vice versa. So this is a strange election where both candidates have very, very low favorability ratings, and candidates are really going to win or lose based on who has the least unfavorable feelings by the electorate.
So there's a lot of issues that we can talk about. But first of all, I want to ask you about the title of the introduction, which is Everyone Sucks 2016. No pun intended. But let me ask you, Alan, is that you talking or is that just a general comment about what you're hearing from others?
Well, most of the book is about what I'm hearing from others. The last chapter with my checklist is about me. But the Everybody Sucks 2016 comes from a website, and there are buttons and shirts, and you can get them. Everyone Sucks 2016. I'm not wearing that button because I don't believe everyone sucks. I'm actually wearing, as we speak now, I'm wearing a hat that looks like a Donald Trump hat, but it says, Make America Great, and then in small letters, Great Britain Again. But I wear it with a button that has a Hillary button, and then in Hebrew it says, I'm with her. So I'm a Hillary supporter. I don't think everybody sucks, but I am trying to write essentially as a reporter, and I'm reporting on a widespread scene. And by the way, I'm on Martha's Vineyard for the summer, which is a bastion of liberal democracy.
Right.
And I'm even hearing it here. This isn't Nantucket. This is Martha's Vineyard where Democrats live, and I'm hearing it here. And I'm hearing it from friends who live in Republican areas who don't like Donald Trump but don't like Hillary Clinton. I have rich friends who have traditionally contributed enormous amounts to Republican candidates. They're saving their money this year. They're not contributing to Republicans. They're not contributing to Democrats. One of my friends is contributing large sums of money to Republican congressional candidates but not to the presidential candidate. Some people are staying home. Some people are voting for the Johnson-Well ticket, which is a strong ticket, two former governors, both of whom were very successful governors. On the other hand, Jill Stein is a complete, just non-entity,
right,
who I hope nobody will vote for. She's actually, interesting enough, she's a Jewish anti-Semite.
Would you characterize Bernie Sanders that way?
No, not at all. Bernie Sanders is a radical, but Jill Stein supports boycotting Israeli academics, only Israeli academics. She blames everything in the Middle East only on the Jewish nation, and she hates her own heritage, and she appointed as vice president a rampant anti-Zionist and a person whose actions certainly border on anti-Semitism. So, you know, we have the anti-Semite ticket, that's the Stein ticket. We have the Libertarian ticket. Then we have the strange Republican ticket that people don't think are really Republicans. And then we have the very traditional Democratic ticket, a woman who's held virtually every office, Senate, Secretary of State, First Lady, been in politics for so many years, a lot of baggage, a lot of problems. In the end of the book, I say you can't predict the outcome of this election because you can't predict Donald Trump's future. We don't know what he's going to do or say. And with Hillary Clinton, we can't predict her past. We don't know what else is going to come out.
That's a good one. You can't predict. No one has ever said that. You can't predict the past.
The past, yeah.
But
the consequences of the past. We can't predict whether WikiLeaks is going to come out in October. with more emails. I've heard all kinds of rumors whether or not there'll be further investigations. So we have one candidate with a troubled past, another candidate with a troubled future.
And what that adds up to, what you've noted, is 81% of the voters say they would be afraid if either Trump or Clinton take office.
That's
and
right.
Then you talk about in the book that this is the most bizarre election of your lifetime.
That's right. Yeah.
So when we put that together, what are we looking at in the future? If people are afraid of both of them taking office, and this has been such a bizarre election, how can we move forward with any type of optimism for this country and the world?
Well, it's very difficult. And I think that whoever wins this election, I think we're going to see some revamping of the process by which people are nominated. Ironically, the Republican Party is more Democratic, small d, than the Democrats, because they don't have superdelegates. They just elect their
right.
candidate based on who does better in the primaries. The Democrats are less Democratic. They have the superdelegates who tend to vote the way the public votes, but serve as a check on populism. And I have a chapter in the book on the excesses of populism. You know, we've had a lot of populist candidates in this country. The first one was back in, you know, the 1820s, Andrew Jackson. It turned out to be a pretty good president. Then we've had other populist candidates, Wallace, who was a populist racist candidate. We've had Huey Long. We had Edward Edwards in New Orleans, who ran against the head of the Ku Klux Klan and said the only thing the two of us have in common is we're both wizards under the sheets. He also said that the only way I would ever not be elected to office is if they find me in bed with a live boy or a dead girl. I mean, this is the kind of populism that we have sometimes in this country.
Alan, now, you're talking about, and you talk about it in the books, the checks and balances of democracy, weighing First Amendment rights versus outlandish populism, which can be very detrimental to society and chaotic, as we've seen throughout the world. Right here in the United States, we're dealing with that now. This weekend, NFL is starting, and I want to talk a little bit about Colin Kaepernick. I want to talk about the Black Lives Matter, and I want to talk about how we balance First Amendment rights with what is really detrimental to society. Unfortunately, we have to take a quick break. We're talking to Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz, of course, is Harvard Law School Professor Emeritus, has written more than 1,000 articles in every magazine and newspaper you can think of. You're listening to Talk Radio 790 KBC. We'll be right back.
At Walgreens, getting diabetes testing supplies with Medicare Part B is a walk in the park. Really, because getting what you need is quick and easy, giving you more time for other things. There's $0 out of pocket on all major brands like Walgreens True Metrics and no extra paperwork. So managing diabetes becomes a stroll down easy street or a trip to the movies or even a day at the beach. Talk to your pharmacist today. Walgreens at the corner of happy and healthy.
Zero out of pocket cost when billed to Medicare and full coverage supplemental insurance.
What if you could store your IRA or 401k where you could see, touch, and hold it in person in the form of physical gold and silver coins? With the Augusta Gold and Silver IRA, you can transfer retirement savings into physical coins and store them where you can actually see them. Getting started is absolutely free, so call now, 855-858-5807. Call toll-free 855-858-5807 now for your free guide to Augusta Gold IRAs.
Hiring people is probably the worst part of my job. It's such a hassle, the searching, the sorting through resumes. Most people don't have the right experience.
We started using ZipRecruiter about 3 months ago. Right from the start, you could tell it was going to make hiring a lot easier. One click and my job was posted to 100-plus job boards, all the top sites.
All of the candidates came to my dashboard, and it's easy to compare them. Thumbs up if I liked them, thumbs down if I didn't. No emails and attachments, printing up docs, phone calls, none of that.
And I couldn't believe the number of great applicants we got. I had the person we needed within 1 week. I don't know how we hired before ZipRecruiter.
Whether you're looking to fill one position or 20, find the best candidates with ZipRecruiter, where your job is just one click away from 100-plus job sites. ZipRecruiter, the fastest way to hire. And right now you can try ZipRecruiter free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio. That's ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio. ZipRecruiter.com/talkradio.
It's time for the kickoff.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew.
And I'm Mike Catherwood.
And on the next Midday Live, we will take your calls. And Mike, Ray Lewis says Kaepernick's out of line.
You know, Drew, there's very few people on the planet where I say when they say it, you listen. Yeah, Ray Lewis is one of those people.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I would not want to see what happens if you don't. Good times.
Yeah.
All right, that and more. Midday Live with Dr. Mike Catherwood on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
And we are back. This is Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm talking with fellow Alan Dershowitz, a New York Times best-selling author of Chutzpah and a bunch of other national bestsellers, including Taking the Stand, My Life in the Law, which was published just a couple years ago. A new book has come out, Electile Dysfunction, A Guide for Unaroused Voters. Larry David said that this book is so good, he might even finish reading it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, Alan, it is a fascinating read, and it touches on so many of the important issues that we're facing today. Before the break, I spoke briefly about Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
I want to ask you something. Colin Kaepernick apparently has done what the First Amendment allows him to do. It's something that we hold near and dear to our heart, First Amendment rights. But isn't the NFL a private company, and aren't they legislating all of the time with rules and regulations what their players can do and cannot do? As a lawyer, as an employer, I tell my lawyers what they can do and what they can't do. They can't go naked to court and make a statement because it's really not in our firm's best interest, and it's not right. Why doesn't the NFL step in and say, this is causing too much of a stir, it's too an emotional issue, Colin Kaepernick, everyone needs to stand. If you have political statements, make them outside of your employment.
They certainly have the right to do that. Of course, the Olympics made the athletes go home when they raised the black fist during the Olympics. Every league has its rules, but they're entitled to have whatever rules they want. And I think the NFL has taken the position, look, we don't approve of this, but we're not going to discipline somebody for exercising their First Amendment rights. Look, this has stirred up a healthy debate. I fundamentally disagree with what the football player did. I love America. I love the flag. I would never refuse to stand up for the national anthem. I sing the national anthem loud and clear because I love America. I love the fact that American young men and women put their lives at risk to defend our liberties, and I think it's an abomination. Look, but I've defended people who burn flags, too, although I would punch them in the mouth if I could, but I wouldn't arrest them. Because that involves state action. I think it's despicable when you burn an American flag or when you refuse to stand up for the Star Spangled Banner. But, you know, my son at one point refused to stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance because he was at an age where he was having conflicts with God and didn't believe in it. And he didn't like the fact that the Pledge of Allegiance had "under God" in it, inserted in the 1950s. And so in protest to that, he refused to say the words "under God" in the pledge. He stood up, but he wouldn't say the words "under God," and the teacher called me, and I defended my son, as of course I would always do, but I would not defend, I would defend legally, but I would not defend somebody for refusing to support the American flag.
All right,
and that's
Alan,
different from particular words in a declaration.
You brought up God in this, and I just want to take it one step further. Colin Kaepernick has a number of Bible verses tattooed on his arms. In fact, when he scored a touchdown, when he was good enough to score a touchdown, he would kiss his biceps where the Bible verses was and say glory to God.
Yeah.
Now, if God is omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent, why doesn't Colin Kaepernick have something against God for allowing this to occur in this country where he believes there's injustice? And why is it against the flag and not against his biceps and his tattoos?
Maybe he thinks God is questioning us or challenging us and asking him to do the right thing. Look, let's turn to Black Lives Matter for a second. I support the concept of Black Lives matter, but I do not support the organization. The organization has been taken over by radicals, by extremists, again, by anti-Semites. Recently, the Black Lives Matter platform called Israel an apartheid genocidal country, the only country in the world. It would never call, for example, Zimbabwe an apartheid country. It is an apartheid country.
So why is this happening?
It discriminates against white farmers, burns their farms down. Yeah.
They went to a delegation went to Israel a couple weeks ago, and they posted on the Facebook, the movement for Black Lives is committed to the global shared struggle of oppressed people, namely the people of occupied Palestine and other indigenous communities who for decades have resisted the occupation of their land, the ethnic cleansing
of
their people.
Well, first of all, they're phony. They're not true. It's not true. It's a lie. I haven't heard them say anything about the occupation of Tibet by the Chinese. They won't do it, because they're a radical left organization. I haven't heard anything about the fact that the Russians continue to occupy Kaliningrad and they continue to occupy Crimea. I haven't heard anything about the difficulties in Cyprus with Greece and Turkey. I haven't heard anything about how the Kurds are suffering from an occupation of their land and how the Armenians are being discriminated against. It's a lie. They don't care about indigenous people. They just don't like Israel. The Palestinians, for them, are an excuse to hate Israel.
So why,
that's what it's all about.
And you wrote a very interesting article for the Boston Globe a couple weeks ago called "A Demonstrator Wore a Black Lives Matter Button During a Protest Against Last Month's Fatal Police Shooting of Paul O'Neill in Chicago." Mm-hmm. So why, and by the way, it's a great read if anyone wants to look it up, why are they diverting the attention from what you say you support to all of these bigger issues that they really have no business being involved with?
Well, it's the old hard left. The old hard left has always done this. The Communist Party didn't care about segregation in America. They just used segregation as an excuse to try to recruit members of the Communist Party. And they did it with some success. And Thurgood Marshall, to his credit, fought against the intrusion of the Communist Party into the NAACP back in the 1930s and the 1940s. We're seeing a repeat of this. This is the Black Panther mentality taking over Black Lives Matter. And the Black Panthers have, of course, historically been an anti-Semitic, anti-American, anti-capitalist organization. And so, you know, I urge your listeners to support the concept of Black Lives Matter, all lives matter. And it's not racist to say all lives matter. All lives do matter. And we have historically devalued Black lives in many, many contexts. But I can support the concept without supporting an obnoxious organization which has been taken over by radicals and which tries to destroy the national liberation movement of the Jewish people and discriminates against Jews. So I'm not going to be coerced by cries of racism to support an organization that is itself racist and bigoted.
And do you think that politicians like Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed will come forth and say, hey, we're going to stop here when the Black Lives Matter movement starts hitting at Israel?
I hope so, but I haven't seen evidence of it. I haven't seen evidence that that has happened from Hillary Clinton, who I'm supporting. I'd like to see President Obama. I'd like to see everybody take the position that Black lives do matter. We support that, but we don't support the anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism and anti-Americanism of the Black Lives Matter platform and Black Lives Matter movement. I urge everybody to read the Black Lives Matter platform. It is so virulently anti-American, anti-free choice, anti-capitalism, anti-everything we stand for. It's a hard left document that could have easily been written in the 1920s or 1930s by Stalinists. We should not be fooled into supporting an organization because we support its motto or its symbol. Saul Alinsky got it right. He said, often things begin as a movement. They then turn into an ideology and finally into a business and then into a racket. And I think what we're seeing is Black Lives Matter devolving in that way from a good slogan into a very, very bad organization.
Well, by the way, you know, you did say that when you mentioned All Lives Matter, you said, by the way, that isn't racist. A lot of people do believe that the title Black Lives Matter is racist, but we can talk about that another time. What I want to talk about now is that last time you were on our show on Gervie's Law, you you did talk about the Iran nuclear deal,
right.
And you were disappointed with the Democrats and certain people who were supportive. Now, Kane, Vice President candidate Kane, garnered a lot of support for that, and then he boycotted Benjamin Netanyahu when he was here. How do you reconcile that with your feelings that you've just expressed about pro-Israel thought in this country?
Well, I don't like what Kane did, and, you know, he was a former student at Harvard Law School, and I've let him know through my articles that I disapprove of that. I thought he was wrong. Would he have walked out on Castro? Would he have walked out on Putin? Would he have walked out on tyrants? But he walks out, essentially, on the prime minister of an allied country who came to plead for the safety of his people. I think it was dead wrong. It doesn't mean I'm not going to vote for him. There's never been a candidate in my 50 years of voting. I've never had a candidate who I have found to be perfect. Based on the balance. And in
right.
my book, Electoral Dysfunction, I have this chart where I go through the 10 factors, and I mention Kane's vote, and I mention his not going to the Netanyahu speech, and I say that I check negative on that one. But on balance, my checklist favors Hillary Clinton. I also want to see Israel always remain a bipartisan issue. And I want to work within the Democratic Party to keep the Democratic Party as pro-Israel as the Republican Party is.
Now, isn't that the conundrum that a lot of people are facing? When one candidate, they may favor some of the issues, but not all of them, and maybe our party lines are really being obscured now. When you were on Fox News with Megyn Kelly, you talked about the criminal justice system, and you said that they're acting politically, especially Marilyn Moseley in the prosecution of Freddie Gray, in the murder of Freddie Gray. Now, how is that going to bode well for the future if we have this politicization of our criminal justice system, which is really at the foundation of our society?
Look, I agree with you, but look, the voters threw Angela Cori out of office, and they should have. She was the one who prosecuted Zimmerman and overcharged him
right.
and got nothing as the result of it. And I suspect that Moseley is going to be thrown out of office, too. She's not particularly popular these days in Baltimore. So I think ultimately in a democracy, the people prevail. And I hope we'll see the people demanding fair justice for all Americans, regardless of race, regardless of gender, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of national origin. And remember that discrimination based on national origin is also against the laws of the United States. That's why the boycott movement against Israelis, just because they happen to have been born in Israel, is as discriminatory as any boycott based on race, gender, or sexual orientation.
Now, when we talk about that, and we talk about some of the issues, and you hit on in the book, Electoral Dysfunction, how important is the Supreme Court nominations? Because we talk about who is going to vote for one candidate or the other. There are some big issues. We could be shaping big issues for the very foreseeable future with who gets elected in terms of the Supreme Court nomination.
No question. If we assume an 8-year term, and I think traditionally presidents have served 8 years rather than 4, we will see a majority of the Supreme Court selected by this next president. There are 4 justices who will definitely retire or leave the court before the end of the 8-year period, and maybe a 5th. And so I think we'll see a dramatic, dramatic change in the Supreme Court potentially. And of course, Donald Trump has told us what he would do. He would appoint 9 Scalias if he could. Now, Justice Scalia was my friend. I liked him.
You didn't agree with him.
We were the same age. I knew his father. But I don't want 9 Scalias on the court. I doubt that Justice Scalia would have wanted 9 Scalias
right.
on the court. I think we need a diverse court. And just the other day, Justices Sotomayor and Kagan talked about the need for greater diversity on the court. And I suspect that Hillary Clinton has some litmus tests, too. She said she would not appoint anybody who did not essentially oppose Citizens United, and she would not appoint anybody who didn't support a woman's right to choose. So this could be very, very important in determining the future of the Supreme Court, which affects all Americans, not for 4 or 8 years, but for 20 or 25 years.
Right here on Gervie's Law, Brian Leiter a few weeks ago said that the Supreme Court was nothing more than a super legislature. Do you agree with that? And
no.
Is that what we're looking at?
No, I don't agree with that. I think the Supreme Court has historically been a check on the legislature, and I think that's clearly the case. I think the best example of that is the reapportionment decisions. We just saw that legislatures couldn't do the right thing, couldn't do justice because they were malapportioned. And the Supreme Court is a check on legislative undemocracy, opened up the channels of democracy by demanding that there be apportionment so that people are represented rather than farms or historically in the Constitution. We had a despicable three-fifths clause where African Americans could not vote, but their bodies counted for three-fifths of a vote. Jefferson becomes president in 1800 as the result of the fact that there are more blacks in the South, and the South, therefore, has disproportionate number of electors in the Electoral College. I mean, that's really undemocratic. So, you know, I think we live in a republic, and we have a system of checks and balances, and the Supreme Court is a very important part of that system of checks and balances.
So using your best Solomonic wisdom, what's going to happen?
Well, I think Hillary Clinton will win. It'll be a close election, and it's possible that Donald Trump will win. The polls are narrowing, and they generally do narrow as we leave Labor Day and get closer to the election, and nobody knows who will be in control of the Senate and the House, and we may see gridlock again. We've seen gridlock now for a long time. We have a Supreme Court nominee sitting without being even given a hearing or an opportunity to make his case.
And how is that fair?
Well, that's not fair. I think the Constitution requires that the Senate advise and consent or reject, but it doesn't give them the power to simply sit on a nomination for so many months and allow the court to begin its term. And it will begin in, you know, 4 weeks, the first Monday in October, with eight justices, and there'll be a lot of 4-4 decisions.
That's right. And do you think if Hillary Clinton gets elected, she will nominate Garland again?
I don't know. I mean, that's hard to know. I would think that would be a wise decision. He is a centrist, moderate, Democratic candidate. He's had a long, good history. But she may decide, look, there have been too many people from Harvard and Yale on the court and too many judges. She may want to pick somebody different. She would be the president-elect. She would not have the ability to do that while she's president-elect. She'd have to wait until she was sworn in, and she could make the nomination. But I think the interesting thing would be this. What if she says, I'm going to nominate so-and-so, who's to the left of Garland? And the Senate says at that point, no, let's confirm Garland. And the president doesn't withdraw Garland's nomination. It could go through over the objection of Hillary Clinton.
But I don't think that
would happen.
That won't happen. You know that won't happen. And if it does, the Republicans, they're deserving of what they get. You know, be careful what you wish for.
Of course.
But when you look at Garland and you look at the question of guns, which is a big issue with Hillary Clinton, she may want to nominate someone who is a little more clear-cut against Second Amendment or gun and for gun legislation and restrictions. And that's what the Republicans are treading on thin ice.
It's a dance. It's a really delicate dance. And nobody knows how it's going to come out. And that's the excitement of watching politics in America. There's so much unpredictability in our country. You know, it's so much easier in some ways to run a government through the parliamentary system.
Right.
But we have a system of checks and balances which can really bring about stalemate. In the British and other governments, there's no stalemate because there's no such thing as an executive branch. The executive branch is the legislative branch, and that is the cabinet is formed from the parliament, but we don't have that in the United States. We have separate elections and we have a separate judiciary, and it can result in the three branches coming to very, very different conclusions about important matters.
And, you know, I'll tell you folks that Alan Dershowitz wrote this book, Electile Dysfunction, A Guide for the Unaroused Voters. This is the time to read it. The next couple of months, as we face the election and we're all looking out to see what's going to happen, if there's going to be any bombs that are going to be dropped by one side or the other. But if you really want to understand the ins and outs of this precarious situation we find ourselves in, it's Alan Dershowitz, Electile Dysfunction, A Guide for Unaroused Voters, and you can get that online. I got mine online, easy to do. before we let you go, Alan, we do have to get to what Chris Darden said about you just a few weeks ago when he was talking about the O.J. Simpson case and Alan Dershowitz. Mm-hmm. Can we play that clip?
Sure.
Well, you know what? Alan Dershowitz doesn't like me very much. And, you know, and I've had, you know, people, as including eighth graders, tell me I should have punched him in the mouth years ago. But, you know, and it's okay that Alan Dershowitz doesn't like me, you know.
Do you think that if Alan Dershowitz were in your shoes, that it would have been a different decision? Or was the jury going to go against the prosecution because it was O.J. Simpson, because of the race card? Was that going to happen regardless of who was prosecuting?
I think that, you know, I think it was a perfect storm. I think that, you know, theoretically, ideally, it was a case that the prosecution could have won. But, you know, you have to put things in context. If, you know, if you're a lawyer out there and you've tried cases, even criminal cases, you know, sometimes things just fall into place for one side as opposed to the other. And here, it's 1995. The Rodney King defendants have been acquitted. You know, the city has been torched. There have been riots. These issues that we talk about around the country about officer-involved shootings and excessive force were huge issues for our community in 1994 and 1995, and people are angry, and people are looking for payback, and now in walks O.J. You know, it's a perfect storm, and instead of trying O.J. in Santa Monica, where the jury would have been more diverse, you bring him downtown, where the jury pool apparently, you know, or at least ultimately, is going to consist of more inner-city African-Americans.
Wow. A lot said by Christopher Darden. Before we get to the second part of that, because it's interesting, what he said probably is something that you would echo about what's going on today, and you talk about it in electoral dysfunction.
But I don't disagree with it.
I didn't think you would, but do you disagree with what he said about you?
No, I don't dislike Darden personally. I don't know him. I don't dislike him. Seems like a very nice guy. I don't think he was up for the job. I'll give you an example. Under California law, he could have required O.J. Simpson to try on the glove outside the presence of the jury to see whether the glove actually fit. But he was so arrogant that he had him try it on in front of the jury. And I was there. I was literally 3 feet away from O.J. when he was trying it on. And it was just a dumb decision. And it was a dumb decision to put on the officer who used the N-word. It was a dumb decision to bring the case to the center of the city. These were just dumb decisions. And I do think that a good prosecutor could have won the case. So I have compassion for Darden. I think he was picked to prosecute the case because of his race. And I think that he wasn't up to the job and he made a lot of mistakes. But I don't dislike him. I don't have anything against him personally. As I say, I don't know him. I just wish he had been a better lawyer.
So why did he say that he should have punched you in the mouth? I mean,
well, that's Donald Trump talking. You know, what he's saying, he didn't even say he'd punch me. He said there were eighth graders.
Other people, yeah.
There were eighth graders who said he should punch me.
Right, right.
You know, I don't think we should be talking like that about people because there are people who do punch people. And that's not the kind of talk that should come from somebody who wants respect. We should debate this and discuss it on shows like yours. We can reasonably disagree, but the idea of punching somebody you disagree with, that sounds to me like Donald Trump.
You know, when I asked him if Alan Dershowitz was prosecuting this case, would the results be different? Now, you've just said that they made, the prosecution made a lot of dumb mistakes.
Yeah.
If you would have been at the helm, isn't it true that you could have created a scenario where there wasn't apparently some doubt about guilt?
Well, I think a good lawyer could have won the case for the prosecution. I've always said we didn't win it, they lost it. And we did our job, and they didn't do their job well enough. And people who are upset about the verdict ought to be upset with the prosecution, not upset with the defense. You want defense attorneys to zealously defend their clients, but I do think that a really good prosecutor could have won that case. And the evidence is in the civil case. There was a very good plaintiff's lawyer in the case. He trimmed the case down. He didn't put on a lot of the things that were put on by the prosecution. And he won the case overwhelmingly. So there's a little bit of an experiment that we can say was conducted, even though the standards of proof are different. Nonetheless, I think that the person who was the plaintiff's lawyer in the civil case, probably would have been able to win the criminal case.
And that's probably a diplomatic way of saying it rather than, you know, might and fight would win out.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
What Christopher Darden said, the second part of that, that was 20 years ago. Doesn't that ring true today when he talks about Rodney King's defendant, you know, being acquitted, people being angry, you know, the officer involved shootings?
Yeah, I was angry when Rodney King, the people who attacked him were acquitted the first time. Remember, they were convicted the second time. It was a federal trial, and it wasn't conducted in Simi Valley, and there was a conviction, but of some of them. I do think that we're seeing too much of that in America today. I do think things have gotten a lot better since 1995. I think we no longer have police commissioners who regard the African-American areas of the city as occupied territory. We have very good police commissioner in Los Angeles, in Boston, in New York, in Chicago, in Dallas. So I think things have improved measurably, but there's a long way to go.
But why are the police getting such a bad name as a whole? We all have bad apples. You've been a lawyer for many years. Mm-hmm. You've even indicated, you know, there's lawyers who you don't trust and who are incompetent.
Let me tell you, you have another few hours. I can tell you about lawyers in major firms that are so unethical that you wouldn't believe it.
I believe it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have dealt with lawyers who are so unethical. They will look you in the eye and just lie to you. And they'll cheat, and they'll do everything. They'll pay off judges.
Right.
They'll, you know, just unbelievable, make campaign contributions selectively to judges. But we'd need a two-hour show to go into all that. That's why I taught legal ethics for 40 years at Harvard, to try to improve the system. And the system has improved dramatically, but there's still a lot of cheat elite at some of the big firms and some of the smaller firms.
So what do
we
do?
We have a lot of work to do.
But what do we do about it? We have a lot of lawyers who listen to this show. They come up to me every day and they say, it's fascinating. Your guests are fascinating. But I still, you know, don't trust them. I will shake their hand and I'll look to see if I still have my watch while they're smiling at me.
It's a terrible thing about the legal profession. You know, I do half of my cases pro bono. I try to maintain a high ethical standard. And yet you have lawyers who just won't do that. All they care about is their pocketbook. And, you know, it's just a terrible thing. And we have to do everything in our power, your listeners, everybody. Always report to the Bar Association any cases where you think lawyers are behaving unethically. That's your obligation as a member of the bar. And I think it's an obligation lawyers ought to take very seriously.
And that's coming from Alan Dershowitz, who's a lifetime law professor. Why aren't we doing a better job at Harvard Law School and some of the other law schools around the country to instill in the future lawyers of society a better legal ethic and moral ethic?
Well, you know, we try. I've been teaching legal ethics. I think I taught undergraduates on morality. All you can do is teach, and then if the students go out and after 10 years, 15, 20 years, decide to go their own way ethically, there's not a lot you can do about it. I have to tell you, I'm very proud. I have never had any of my students who I've taught legal ethics come back and say they've had an ethical problem. But we have a lot of work to do in the area of ethics, and someday I'd really love to come on your show and name some names.
I would love that because, you know, I live with it every day. I'm a trial attorney, and I can't believe things. Just this week, I went to court. I got a notice of a hearing. I went to the court and said, how did this hearing get set? The court had no idea, and they found out that the lawyer had been denied a hearing and set the hearing on their own in front of a judge that had never been implemented in the system.
Right.
How does that happen?
Well, you would be shocked if I gave you some of the names. You'd be shocked at some of the big names, some of the famous names.
Well, when are you going to
I'll write a book about it one of these days.
I think you do, because every time you're on, you talk about a book you've just written. And, you know, a few weeks ago we had Burt Fields, the entertainment attorney,
on. He's a great lawyer, yeah.
A very great lawyer. And he said that he had some interesting things to say about Donald Trump, who he represented many years ago on a real estate deal. And he said to me, if it gets close to election time and it's a close race, according to the polls, I will come on your show and I will disclose things that Donald Trump said and did, and I have proof, I have letters, and I will disclose them. I don't know how I don't know how we can do that with attorney-client privilege, but
well, He may engage in an act of civil disobedience. We'll see.
You know,
I have to say goodbye now, but
yeah.
It's always a pleasure to be on your show. You always ask probing and provocative questions. I hope people will read my book, Electile Dysfunction, and write to me if they have any critiques of it. And
yeah.
You can get it on Kindle.
You can get it on Kindle. One last question before we let you go. Are you going to help Hillary Clinton prepare for the debates?
Oh, no. I haven't been asked to do that. That was a rumor. But, you know, I'm certainly going to help her. I'm going to try to campaign in Florida.
And you did say that you were the loudmouth New Yorker who could help out in that regard, right?
I think I could do a pretty good imitation of Donald Trump.
Alan Dershowitz, thank you so much for being on Gervie's Law. The book's called Electile Dysfunction, A Guide for Unaroused Voters. We hope to check in with you as the election comes closer, and maybe you'll have another book written by then.
Anytime. Thanks
All right,
a lot.
Take
Be
care,
well.
Alan.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. That was quite a segment with Alan Dershowitz. Some really telling tales, not only about the legal profession, and I'm really excited to have him back on to name names about who he's saying in big firms and lawyers around the country who are so unethical that you wouldn't believe it. Maybe that's something that we can look forward to. And as you know, we here at Gervie's Law feature some of the greatest lawyers and scholars in this country every week. Listening to Gervie's Law is a whole new experience for finding out about the legal profession and life, how law intersects with life. I'm Alan Gervie. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shopped the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy, for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-597-4816. That's 1-800-597-4816. 1-800-597-4816. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop, you save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price can vary depending on your health issuing company and other factors. Not available in all states.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
You may have heard that mortgage rates are at all-time lows. Maybe you even refinanced recently. But somehow I have to get you to listen, so I'll say one word, Brexit. Well, maybe it isn't a word yet, but it's why Cash Call Mortgage can make you its best offer ever. Call 877-890-CASH, and we'll let you know in about 5 minutes if we can offer you a 2.75% rate and APR 15-year fixed-rate loan with no, as in zero, closing costs of any kind. This is absolutely crazy, insane, lunacy. But if you call right now, you'll be saving interest daily by the time it takes you to hear this commercial about 20,000 times. So whether you got your mortgage last week, month, or year, you don't have a 2.75% APR. So call 877-890-CASH and fix it now.
Impact Mortgage Corp., DBA Cash Call Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender. Call 855-657-9910 for terms and restrictions. California Department of Business Oversight Residential Mortgage Lender Law License 4131083. NMLS 128231.
That's 877-890-CASH for a 2.75% rate and APR today.
Hey, you like free stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well,
KABC is on a mission to hook you up with tickets to the hottest concerts, comedy shows, movie premieres, theme parks, restaurants, gift cards, cash books, DVDs, hats, t-shirts, fans, cash money, Well, pretty much anything that we can get our hands on.
Gimme.
But before, hang on a second, before you can get your hands on these cool prizes, there are a couple of rules.
KABC on-air contests are open to legal U.S. residents age 18 or older at the time of entry who reside in Los Angeles, Orange, San Bernardino, Riverside, or Ventura counties.
Employees of Cumulus Media Holdings Incorporated, its parent company, affiliates, related entities, and subsidiaries, other radio stations serving the listening area, and immediate family members and household members of all such employees are not eligible to participate.
Listeners may only win once every 30 days. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Limit one entry per person unless otherwise stated.
A complete copy of the rules can be obtained by visiting kabc.com/contest-rules.
Are you ready for some football? Are you ready for football players not standing for the national anthem?
And a $1.1 million snake bite.
Get smart on the next Doug and T-Ray 5 to 10 right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes. You are listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. I am Alan Gervie, and I'm exhausted. Wow. Was that an exhilarating interview with Alan Dershowitz? We just spoke with Alan, who, of course, is the Harvard Law School professor emeritus, often seen all over the media, most recently with Megyn Kelly on Fox News, and he talked about just about every issue you could think about with this upcoming election. And his book is The Electile Dysfunction, A Guide for Unaroused Voters, although he does conclude in the book that he is voting for Hillary Clinton. And I'm not sure that that's consistent with everything that he says in the book about the candidates not having such a great record. He talks about Hillary Clinton's past and Donald Trump's future. He also talked about Black Lives Matter, and as he said, he supported the concept. He thought that the organization has become an obnoxious organization, racist and bigoted. Those were his words, even though he supports the concept. We talked about Colin Kaepernick, and this is something that's important to me because I just want to watch football. It's entertainment. I am so excited about the NFL season and watching football, taking a few hours away from all the stress in my life, and I'm sure you all have stress. I would never walk in anyone else's shoes because we all have stress regardless of what our lot in life is. But it's time for football, and these football players who are being politicians, let's see how many people are going to kneel during the national anthem. I got to tell you, Colin Kaepernick talks about the bad apples. He talks about the police. He even wore socks with pigs on them and a police hat on the pig. What kind of respect is that showing not only for our country, but also for the people, the men and women who protect us? I will tell you one thing. As a lawyer and as Alan Dershowitz said, there are many bad apples in the legal profession. I see them every day. Lawyers who are dishonest and unethical. It's the same in every profession. Let's talk about football, Colin. Let's talk about Ray Rice. Let's talk about Aaron Hernandez. Let's talk about Greg Hardy. Let's talk about Darren Sharper. Let's talk about CJ Spielman. All NFL players or former NFL players now who have been convicted or charged with some really awful, awful things. Should we now say that all NFL players are Attila the Hun, are Nazis, or whatever you want to call them? Are we going to group everyone, Colin Kaepernick included, as these bad people just because there are some bad folks in every profession? Colin Kaepernick should be ashamed of himself. I understand his First Amendment right to speak out. But look at your own profession. Look at the people there. And by the way, Colin, all those people I mentioned were either black or half black or whatever. And that really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what color you are. It matters about what you do and how you
you characterize a group of people who are, for the most part, good. And that's the NFL players, for the most part, good. That's the police officers of our country. Now I'm really worked up. I want everyone to have a great weekend. My name's Alan Gervie. You've been listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.